It is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in on the work of the Assembly Speaker's Task Force on Human Trafficking as it gathers testimony around the state through public hearings this month, seeking ideas for future legislative policies that aim to prevent human trafficking and to support survivors. Detective Brandon Kehoe leads the Sheboygan County Human Trafficking Task Force, and Beth Heilman is a social worker on this task force. You can join the conversation by calling in with a question. You can share your comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Brandon and Beth, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning. Brandon, let's start with you. How does the Sheboygan County Human Trafficking Task Force work against human trafficking?
We're fortunate in our community. We have a great group of service providers and non-governmental organizations that work together very cohesively to make sure that our community is prepared for human trafficking situations, to make sure that we're providing community awareness, prevention efforts. And then when we do identify cases of human trafficking, that we're providing the victim survivor with the best services and holding the offender accountable.
And what came up for you? What development surfaced at the public hearing?
Well, it was a great opportunity to not only provide some context to what we're doing locally to address human trafficking, but also we have some legislation that we're working with Representative Amy Binsfield on that was an opportunity for us to provide some more information of that publicly to the legislators.
For you, Beth Heilman, what were some of your big takeaways from the public hearing in Oshkosh?
It was really great, excuse me, to see the questions that the assembly people had. We really felt that they were hearing us out and that they were supporting what we were looking at. Like I said, there were great questions about who we were hoping to hold accountable with this bill, but there really was a lot of support.
When you say the lawmakers had great questions, what did they ask?
So they were curious, you know, the bill that we're looking at is to hold people accountable that are harboring runaways. And one of their big concerns was, does this include people like grandma and grandpa or family friends that might be being a barrier between when parents and kids are having a bad night and they're arguing?
How much human trafficking happens in Sheboygan County compared to other parts of the state? Can you give a little a read on the situation?
It's one of the biggest questions that gets asked to us every time we do a presentation. Hmm. And what I would say is it's happening everywhere. It's a matter of, is it identified in your community? And are there people that are working to end it? So I would say Sheboygan County is very similar to every other county. It's just a matter of we're working hard to identify it and work against it.
Detective Brandon Kehoe, how do you answer that question in terms of is it happening in Sheboygan County and comparisons to other parts of the state?
Exactly like Beth said, this is impacting all 72 counties. And what's different about Sheboygan compared to maybe rural areas is obviously our close proximity to major metropolitan areas like Chicago and Milwaukee, that it certainly has an impact here. But furthermore, it's happening everywhere. And the answer is, what are you doing to combat it? Do you have a team of, you know, highly trained, specialized people that are trying to be proactive with it? Or is it simply just happening and it's not being addressed by those responsible for dealing with it?
How reliable are your estimates? Are you concerned about underreporting or undercounting?
Absolutely. I'm concerned about underreporting. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of people knocking on our door to report human trafficking. There's a lot of work investigatively that goes into identifying those who are vulnerable, those who may or may not be victims in places where these things might be happening, or who the offenders might be. So we definitely are concerned about things being underreported. And that's why we don't rely heavily on statistics, because we know that there are people out there that just aren't willing to explain to us that they are a victim or that they are offenders. So that's certainly something that we take into account.
We're talking about human trafficking in Wisconsin with Detective Brandon Kehoe, leader of the Sheboygan County Human Trafficking Task Force. And Beth Heilman is here, a member of the task force and a social worker. You can join in. Your questions and comments are welcome along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Beth, who is most vulnerable to human traffickers?
What we're noticing in our county is the runaway population. There's a lot of different things that can cause a person to be vulnerable, but our youth in our community that are running upwards of, 22 times in a 2-year period are very vulnerable. They're looking for shelter. They're looking for somebody to care. And that's what we're seeing and working on.
Do you find that trafficker routes, maybe via Milwaukee or Chicago, bigger cities, are they affecting Sheboygan on this issue?
As far as the runaways, it's definitely a concern. If a runaway leaves our population or Sheboygan area and goes to Milwaukee or Chicago, it is going to add complexities to finding them. So that's definitely a problem. But a lot of them are just staying in the Sheboygan area.
Brandon, how do authorities typically learn about trafficking?
So we're very fortunate here that since we prioritize this, we also get a lot of information from the community. So one thing that Beth and I do is we sit on a team called the Sheboygan County At-Risk Diversion Team, where we identify kids in our community who are most vulnerable and at risk to becoming victims of human trafficking. So our children who are running away from home, maybe do not have a stable home life, are dealing with poverty, homelessness, drug and alcohol addiction, things like that. So we're able to kind of identify early on, who are victims, who they are, and who's at risk to becoming a victim. So a lot of times we reach out to these kids, develop a relationship with them, and oftentimes they'll tell us things that help us kind of get a better gauge about what's happening. A lot of times it's just simply talking to people, knowing who's vulnerable and at risk, whether they're juveniles or adults, and trying to get information from them. And we've had a lot of success in being able to do that. And I think when you have a system that works effectively, you're going to find things that you're looking for more frequently.
Do you handle cases involving children differently than adults?
It is a little more complex with a child just because of their age and how the brain is developed. That can be difficult, but really, victim survivors, whether they're adults or victims, are very complex situations. There's a lot of needs that these victim survivors have. Very frequently for us, it's alcohol and drug addiction, mainly methamphetamine. What we see in our community is a huge factor with a lot of the people, unfortunately, who fall victim to this.
Beth Heilman, it seems, perhaps human trafficking is viewed through a criminal justice point of view, holding the traffickers accountable. Can it also be viewed through a public health prevention perspective?
Yeah, it's definitely something that we as a community need to work on. So we're trying to involve our community in those efforts. We have a lot of people that may have seen a presentation in the past, or maybe they're affected by family or friends, and they have interest in helping the professionals that are in the group to work on this issue.
That's social worker Beth Heilman with the Sheboygan County Human Trafficking Task Force. We have Sheboygan Police Department Detective Brandon Kehoe focusing on cases involving human trafficking and leads the task force. Call in with a question. You can share your concerns at 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Assembly Speaker's Task Force on Human Trafficking, it held its third public hearing, this time in Oshkosh, seeking testimony to help inform future legislation to prevent human trafficking and to support survivors. Be part of this discussion. You can call in with a question or share thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Brandon Kehoe, who is a detective for the Sheboygan Police Department, leading the county's human trafficking task force. And we have Beth Heilman with us, a social worker in Sheboygan, serving on the Sheboygan County Human Trafficking Task Force. Let's go to Carol in Milwaukee. Carol, hi. What would you like to share?
Good morning. I'd like to share that in Milwaukee, since I think there's a lot more trouble all over the place. And the cost of investigation is so high. I think that is probably the reason why one case that I know about where the detectives at first were going to do something about it, but then, no, they weren't going to do anything, and so on and so forth, about a suspicion. Unless they actually see the actual act happen, they don't want to hear about it. They want very easy cases because I believe it has to do with economics. Milwaukee is underfunded in many ways, and this is connected with this, you know, trying to get a handle on this. You need investigation. You can't just wait until the poor victim comes up to you and tells you what happened.
Okay. Carol, I want Detective Kehoe here to respond with his insights on the cost of investigations and the time it takes. Go ahead.
Well, I will tell you, I can only speak to the context of what we do here in Sheboygan, but yes, I would agree the investigations are very complex. I've had several cases that have taken months to collect the facts and information. So it is very difficult. Oftentimes we, you know, struggle with getting, you know, our victim survivors to cooperate and provide statements right away. So that can delay things. So I would agree the complexities and challenges of our investigations are high. You know, as far as the cost, I'm fortunate, you know, I'm provided, you know, the resources that I need to be able to investigate these if that involves being outside of my normal hours. So that's not something that I guess that we look at here is you know, minimizing, you know, the cost or the fiscal problems that it might cause. We're focused on providing the best services to the victim survivors and trying to get to the bottom of what's actually happening in our community.
Do you think the collaboration with the task force in different areas is helping to, you know, to build on the time and effort it takes, you know, a single agency to do something on this issue?
Well, I will tell you one thing that's unique about our task force is we don't have any money. We are a task force that has a bunch of different service providers and non-governmental organizations that work together and collaborate on this issue. We don't have a budget. There's nothing there for us. We're able to be creative. And I think what sets us apart is we have a group of people on our task force that work together very well. We're not siloed in the the agencies that we represent. We're just working to provide the best service to the community. And we're doing that actually with essentially no money, which I think is pretty interesting.
Beth Heilman, what support does the task force need from state lawmakers?
We need their support in helping us hold people accountable. As I said earlier, really what we're seeing is the people that are harboring the runaways, that are making it easy for them to stay away from people that will protect them, and giving them things that they don't need that are harmful, like meth and other drugs. We just need the ability to do more than just give those people a citation, which doesn't mean a lot to most of them.
Do these public hearings help?
I think they do. It gives us the opportunity to explain to these lawmakers what is the problem in our community. Otherwise, they have no idea necessarily. So we want to make sure they know what's going on in our community and exactly what we need.
Detective Kehoe, you had mentioned working with Representative Amy Binsfeld of Sheboygan on perhaps future legislation. Could you give us a sense of what the work is like and what you're looking to do?
Yeah, working with Representative Binsfeld has been phenomenal. For quite some time, we've recognized that there's a legal gap in our state where it isn't a criminal offense to harbor a runaway juvenile. And that's a concern because we've had multiple instances of, you know, homes or locations within our community where they have enabled not only human trafficking, but other things like child sexual assault and drug use, exposure to a lot of our at-risk youth who are looking for a place to kind of feel accepted and belong, and they get gravitated towards these really problematic homes. So we started doing research and learned that well over 30 states in America have a law that covers this. So considering our relationship with Representative Binsfeld, she's helped us kind of get that momentum, which was great to be able to provide more information about that at the public hearing last week, so we can hopefully get this law enacted.
We're talking about efforts against human trafficking with Detective Brandon Kehoe, leads the Sheboygan County Human Trafficking Task Force. Social worker Beth Heilman is on the task force. You can join in with your question and comments, 800-642-1234. Brandon, what support does the Department of Justice offer the state and our state's Justice Department in terms of Sheboygan County to help eliminate human trafficking?
I was really fortunate earlier this year. I got to attend a week-long training put together by the Department of Justice specific to human trafficking issues and got to hear more about some of the things Department of Justice is doing. They were very curious to learn more at like the county level, what we're doing, especially considering that we're doing this, you know, with a pretty much minimal budget. But they were very interested to hear what stakeholders are on our task force, what are the initiatives that we're working on. So there seems to be definitely some prioritization with this issue in our state, which I think is great, because if we can have a statewide impact, it's going to help disrupt how human trafficking impacts the Badger State.
I wonder, is Sheboygan coordinating with the Justice Department's Wisconsin Anti-Human Trafficking Task Force that just, you know, received a 3-year extension of its grant?
Yes. Representatives from that task force and I have spoken at length about some of the issues that we're doing and some of the needs that we have. Specifically, you know, I think our big issue is when we identify somebody who is a victim survivor of human trafficking, there's a lot of resources that they need. Generally, there's alcohol and drug treatment that's needed. They need help with trauma. They need help with mental health, you know, getting in that different path for their life where they don't relapse back into a life of human trafficking. So those are some of the things that I've explained that I think statewide are a huge need, because we identify this person who is essentially kind of a broken human being, and what can we do and collaborate with, you know, various resources to kind of help them. So that's one thing that I've had great conversations with them about.
Beth, you know, what support do you see available for children and families, especially who have been affected by human trafficking?
We have some great agencies in our community. We have a Safe Harbor Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Agency that provides counseling and advocacy, legal support to not only victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, but also families that have been dealing with human trafficking. We also have RAISE, which is a Runaway and Youth Services for specifically individuals that may have run away, and support for their families. It's really something that we're working on, getting all of these people around the table with us to be able to work to help and support victims and their families.
Before we have to go, Brandon, what is your advice to other counties who seek to launch a human trafficking task force within their community?
I think the most important part is relationships and trust. You know, when I'm working with Beth or other members of our task force, we check our egos at the door, we hold each other accountable, and I can't look at things just through the law enforcement lens. I have to keep in mind, you know, what does this look like for the social worker? What does this look like for the advocate? And there has to be this really cohesive relationship. And if you can all get together in a room and work on, okay, what's best for our vulnerable people in the community and what service can we provide? When you work together that collaboratively, you can have a huge impact. Like I mentioned before, we're doing this essentially with no budget. But because we have strong relationships and partnerships with the people that are on our task force, we accomplish a lot and we're very driven, we're very goal-oriented. And quite frankly, if we can do this, I think it can exist in really all 72 counties. It's just a matter of everybody being able to, sit in a room, get along, and
And work
work together on what's
together.
best for the community.
Brandon and Beth, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Sheboygan Police Detective Brandon Kehoe, Beth Heilman, social worker on this task force. It is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in conversation with the new state toxicologist at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. This is the lab that focuses on public health and environmental responses. We examine its testing initiatives and issues facing forensic labs across the state. And you can take part in the discussion. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Share your thoughts, email ideas at WPR.org. State toxicologist Amy Miles was forensic toxicology section director at the lab for almost a decade. Amy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. What are your top priorities in this new role?
It's really exciting. The first priority is going to be working on a project that I've been doing for the last few years, which is trying to align and organize forensic toxicology laboratories across the country. We're all sort of doing different testing and different ways that we do things, and funding is not always the same. So I've been working with a program called the Regional Toxicology Liaison Program. I'm the program manager for that, and we're going to bring that locally. So we're going to start some of the answers that we've gotten through that program. We'll bring it here to the state of Wisconsin. So that's exciting. It'll be things like supporting our laboratory and the crime laboratory and their testing, better data harmonization, and then I'll also continue to work on some research projects that we have through the hygiene lab in partnership with the University of Wisconsin School of Pharmacy, which is really exciting.
So why does the way you do things at your toxicology lab here in Wisconsin need to align with how these labs work in states around the country?
That's a really good question. And people often don't know that laboratories within states and then between states are not doing the same testing. So if you can imagine somebody that is pulled over for an operating while intoxicated offense, their lab of choice isn't necessarily up to them. And their sample is going to be sent to one of several labs within the state. And if we're not all doing the same testing, they're not going to get the same sort of treatment that you would if we were all in alignment. And then the problem comes also not only within state, but then throughout the country, if we're all doing different testing and not testing for the same compounds or drugs, when we report information back to highway safety partners about what drugs we're finding in impaired drivers, or to our public health partners for our fatal overdoses for drugs, we're not telling them the whole story. And so they can't tell exactly what is going on because we're underreporting that data.
Do you find a greater diversity of drugs in the tests you run? And how do you keep up with the detection of new drugs circulating in communities?
I'll tell you, the fentanyl issue has really become really scary and something I've never seen in my 25-year career. And that's really changed the landscape, because where we used to know what drugs we should look for, now it's just a constant change that occurs every roughly quarter. We're seeing new drugs come through, and a lot of these drugs are fentanyl-based, which basically means they start with fentanyl, and then they make some changes to make a different type of fentanyl drug, and sometimes it's far more potent. So the chances of a fatal overdose are much greater. So to be able to do the testing for these drugs and then get information out to the community and the public so that they're aware of what's going on has been a real challenge. So alignment is really important.
Okay, so there's the fentanyl challenge. What testing do you also oversee as Wisconsin State Toxicologist?
One of the other programs that we're going to start is a roadside oral fluid testing program, and that will be looking for drugs at the roadside as law enforcement go through an operating while intoxicated or OWI investigation. We actually perform two different projects here in Wisconsin, looking at these devices, kind of putting them to the test, checking to see if they're reliable, if they're scientific, and can we repeat the test? And they were very, very robust. So now we're at the point where we are ready to begin rolling out a program, and we're in those early stages right now.
Would you compare this to like a breath test? What is it like?
Yeah, that's actually a great comparison. It's minimally invasive, just like the roadside breath test that officers do. But it's just another tool for them to understand if somebody is not looking like they're under the influence of alcohol and they can tell that there's something else going on, they can also do a roadside oral fluid test and it'll tell us which drug or which class of drugs are involved to kind of narrow things down a little bit.
How quickly is that test? How quickly do those test results come when this is a roadside test? Not in a controlled environment, obviously.
Yeah, that's always a concern. The tests take about 5 minutes or less. The actual sampling of the oral fluid is maybe 30 seconds or less. And then if it's in it gets cold in Wisconsin and it gets snowy and windy. So if it's not in an ideal environment outside, the officer can either do the test in the squad car or they can transport the person to a local hospital or a police department and do the test there.
Are there additional tests done in tandem with a roadside oral fluid test?
The roadside oral fluid test will not be used in terms of something that you would adjudicate in court.
Okay.
So we would be looking for also collecting a blood sample if that's needed through the investigation. And that's what we do right now. Blood specimens are collected from individuals suspected of OWI. And then those samples are sent to either the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene or the crime lab. And so one of the other initiatives we're working on is a program where law enforcement would be trained as certified phlebotomists, and they would be able to draw the blood at a hospital or a police department instead of tying up key hospital personnel to do that work.
Amy Miles with us, the new state toxicologist at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. You can call in with your questions, your comments about these program initiatives, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Amy, you mentioned court. I'm just wondering, can you talk a little bit about when you are required to go to court to be like a witness or how that works with a clinical toxicologist in court providing testimony?
Sure. It's part of our job as forensic toxicologists. All of us in the state have to appear in OWI trials, whether that's just a trial in front of a judge or a trial in front of a jury. At the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene, we actually testify over 300 times a year, and it's all over the state. So you can imagine we're probably out around on the roads in the state testifying just as much as we're in the laboratory doing the work. So it's a lot of time and effort, but it's also really important because we want to make sure that we're providing the best information we can to those jurors and also the person that has their sample that was sent to us. We want to make sure they understand we took all the precautions and did everything we could to do the testing correctly.
Are there times when the hygiene lab analysts work with the state crime lab analysts on cases?
We try to collaborate with the crime lab as much as possible. They actually were very fortunate. We're really excited for the crime lab. They have been able to procure some new instrumentation, and it's instrumentation that we already have. And so we're really looking forward to working with them to get their instruments online. And again, this just speaks back to once that happens, we will really be in this great alignment where we're testing for all of the same drugs. They'll be able to see some of these fentanyl compounds that they haven't been able to before.
You mentioned phlebotomy and blood drawing and working to allow police officers to attend phlebotomy courses and gain a certification. What do you hope would change with this additional officer training?
We really found through COVID that, and just through my career, I've seen this as well. I'll show up for court, sometime maybe mid-morning or in the afternoon, and the phlebotomist has been sitting there all morning after they've worked a shift all night, and then they have to go work that night again. So we found that's a burden on just those people and then the hospitals. But then through COVID, we found, it's far more important for individuals that are brought to the hospital to be diagnosed and taken care of. And the last thing we want to do is pull those key personnel away from that job and then have them perform a legal blood draw when really anyone can be trained to perform a very typical legal blood draw from the arm. If you go and you give blood, you see them, they take your arm and they take blood from your arm. It's not quite that extensive, but it is something that anybody can be trained to do. So that's what we're looking to do here.
Do other states have law enforcement phlebotomists?
Yes, there's almost a dozen other states that have a program, and some of these programs have been in place for over 20 years. So we are not the first, which is by design. We would prefer others go through it first and we can learn from mistakes and get positive feedback from them and then move forward without having to kind of recreate the wheel.
Are there any mistakes and feedback that you have observed in other areas that have done this of the country?
The biggest feedback we received was start small. So we're going to take that to heart and we're looking to hopefully start a class next either spring or summer. And we're going to keep the class small so that we can grow it, very slowly and do it really well in a very standardized way.
I wonder, will police who have this additional training and certification, is that absorbed into the job of an officer, or are they compensated for holding such a license?
They likely won't be compensated. That'll be up to their agency if they want to provide any extra compensation. But in terms of any sort of burden on the agency itself, if you have an officer that performs an OWI arrest and a different officer comes in to draw their blood, that extra time from that phlebotomy officer can be paid by the Wisconsin Bureau of Transportation Safety. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a burden on the agency financially. And honestly, a lot of law enforcement already have this capability. They've either been a paramedic or an EMT. So for them, this really isn't a lot of extra training for them to have to do. And we've gotten really great response from them that a lot of them are looking forward to this because they too feel the burden when they walk into that hospital and it's really busy. And then they have to ask someone to help them to draw the blood. They realize that's a big burden.
Amy Miles is toxicologist for the state of Wisconsin as we examine the initiatives underway inside the State Laboratory of Hygiene. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at any point. 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in conversation with the new Wisconsin State Toxicologist, Amy Miles, at the State Laboratory of Hygiene. We explore priorities and challenges in clinical lab testing in areas of public health and safety, environmental concerns, and toxicology. You can ask a question along the way, share your comments, call 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Amy, stepping back, how involved is the hygiene lab in monitoring the spread of COVID-19?
The hygiene lab actually has a communicable disease division, which is one of the greatest divisions in the country that we really get looked to for the work that that group does. And so they have been always very involved in the testing of COVID-19 and always looking for innovative ways to keep up with the variations within the virus, but then also looking for ways to potentially predict and model what might be coming. So they're a really impressive group.
Within this group, is there testing of wastewater? And is that the best method for monitoring the spread of COVID in the future?
There is a wastewater testing group for COVID, and they are also just such an incredible group. They're one of few in the country that have started a center of excellence for that work here at the State Lab of Hygiene. So it's really exciting to have all these different systems within one. You know, you have public health and then the forensic toxicology group. So it's a really interesting and diverse group.
What has your toxicology lab learned from the pandemic in terms of your processes and procedures?
COVID was really tough on our group, simply because we were considered key personnel. And so we did not have the opportunity to kind of work from home or, you know, be able to be a little bit more flexible about things like that because testing still has to happen. Unfortunately, during COVID, while we saw a slow dip in OWI arrests, it very quickly rebounded. And then with the courts being closed, during that time, a lot of those cases are now being adjudicated in addition to current caseload. So it's been very stressful, but you know, the State Lab of Hygiene Forensic Toxicology Group is just one like none other. And I'm just so impressed with how hard they've worked and they've done everything they could to just keep everything going.
But how do you prioritize testing, especially when there's a surge that you need to do within the lab? And how do you prioritize what gets done first in the lab?
Yeah, the communicable disease group does a really nice job of maintaining any sort of personnel and testing that has to go on. And then from the forensic toxicology side, you know, we've seen a really significant increase in our death investigations, specifically with fentanyl. So just really prioritizing those cases so that we can make sure we try to get them done within 30 days or less, because we know people are waiting on us to decide cause and manner of death. And then those families need to have some sort of answer from us. And so we work really hard to try to get that information back out as quickly as possible.
And I would imagine time is really important when you're trying to communicate public health. If there is a new type of fentanyl that is available in a community and it is really harmful or deadly, then you want to make sure you can get that information out as quickly as possible.
Yeah, we have some really key and important partnerships with folks at the Department of Health here in Wisconsin, and we sit on a number of different human prevention and behavioral health groups to try to make sure we get word out when we see something new that we want to get back to the community. But that's also one of our downfalls. We don't have a great way to report that information back out right now, and so that kind of falls into the data harmonization role that I'm going to be working on. So it's not only timely reporting of drugs for death investigations, but then also for highway safety as well.
Data harmonization, making sure there's a harmony among different sets of data. Tell us a little bit about that terminology.
Well, you know, for people out there that are nerds like me and enjoy some really great data, it's hard to look at data when it's not complete and when it's not timely. So a lot of the work that we're going to be doing in the coming years is going to be to more complete data so people can make better decisions, whether it's on a community level or a statewide level or a policy level. And then also just timeliness. You know, we want to make sure we're getting information out there as quickly as possible, because as I said before, we know these drug trends change. And again, it's almost on the quarter. So the sooner we can get information out to communities so they know what's happening, the safer things can be.
talking with Amy Miles, the new state toxicologist at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. You can call in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Amy, we heard from Turley and Sullivan called in, and Turley is wondering if police could take suspects to a fire station for drug testing instead of going to a hospital. What could fire stations provide?
You know, that's a really great suggestion, and I appreciate that. And again, as others that are listening might have other questions or suggestions, please bring those sorts of ideas forward. A fire station would be a great place to either do the roadside oral fluid test or to set up a phlebotomy room to be able to safely, in a controlled environment, draw an individual's blood. I love that idea. Thank you.
Amy, does the hygiene lab have enough analysts to meet its testing demands?
At the moment, no, but we were very fortunate last spring to be able to receive additional funding through the state legislature. So at the time, we hired 2 new positions, and there are still 4 more yet to come, which is really exciting, but also a little daunting because that's a lot of people to train and get into the workforce. But we're really excited that we have this opportunity. I'm very grateful.
Do you have struggles with recruitment?
Actually, we don't. We're one of the laboratories in the country that's really looked upon as a leader. And so we will often get up to 30 different applicants for any of our forensic toxicologist positions. And they're all great applicants. So we really haven't had too much of a difficulty, and we've been able to procure some really great people that work at the lab right now.
In our last minute together, are turnaround times at the state hygiene lab different today than in previous years?
Yes, they're getting better. They're still not where we want them to be, which is where all those new individuals coming in are really going to make a huge impact. You know, for a while, we were almost a year to get a case turned around. Again, we prioritize those medical examiner cases, so they were quicker, but we know it's still not acceptable. So we are able to hire people to be able to do the work, which is really going to make a huge difference.
What should an acceptable turnaround time be?
We really want it to be 40 days or less. And if we could get it even to 30 days or less, that would really be ideal. And we know that the courts are often waiting on us to be able to move forward with whatever process they need. And people that get assessed for treatment are going to need that information. So we understand that we have got to do better, and we're working on that.
Amy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for this time.
Amy Miles is toxicologist for the state of Wisconsin at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.